If you're visiting, fill out a card. It would be great to have a record of your attendance. We would love to have that. It's good to see Micah here this morning. It's good to meet Chuck and his family, and glad that you guys are with us as well. Eric, good to have you back. And I think that's most of our visitor types, so it's good to see everyone here. You know, if you want to turn to Matthew chapter 14, that'll be our text this morning. The title of my lesson was Family Time, and then I kind of switched that around a little bit, and now it's Dismiss the Crowds, but we'll explain that a little bit better here in just a minute. So, what? She gave me the look. I don't know what the look is for. So, a group of friends, a bunch of guys decided to go deer hunting. It was one of their annual rituals. They have a huge lease of land. About 25, 30 guys would all get together, and they would go to this huge lease, and they would all divide into twos. And so later that evening, one of the guys is coming back, and he's got this 12-point buck. I mean, it is just this huge deer, and he's got it on his shoulders, and he's laboring and breathing, and he's trying to get this buck back to camp, and he slams it down. And everybody's just taking pictures and looking at it. And then finally one of them goes, "Hey, where's your partner? Where's Harry?" And he goes, "I don't know. I think he had a stroke or a heart attack or something a few miles back." And they go, you left Harry on the trail?" And he goes, "Well," and now he goes, "it's a tough call." He goes, "I didn't figure anybody'd steal Harry." And so priorities, right? We talk about priorities all the time. You know, we make choices every day, and those choices reflect what we consider valuable. And we are doing a four-lesson series, as we started that last week, on time and the importance of time. I talked about Robert Hastings last week. He made a statement that said, "The great dividing line between success and failure can be expressed in five words." Do you remember that? Five words? I didn't have the time. So we talk about time, and this morning you have a round to it. It's another Zig Ziglarism. It's something that I appreciated for years to come. I had a round to it forever. I had it taped to my mirror. And anytime I would say, "Oh, I'll eventually get I'll get around to it." And then I had it. And so I had to do it. And it was really a pretty cool thing. We talked about Jesus last week as the Lord of time, and that Jesus clearly understood his mission, that the reason he spent the time he spent on the things that he did and the people he spent time with, because he knew his mission. And we talked about how it's important for us to find our mission. And then Jesus clearly understood his own limits. There's an underlying message, and I think I've already said that to you. When you talk about time, I think the underlying message is the word priority. Because how we spend our time shows our priority. So you're going to notice a little bit more about that this morning. What are the things and who are the people that we care about the most? There's the place, right? There's the place, and those are the folks that we're going to spend our time with. So I want to talk a little bit about family this morning. And if you say, "Well, I don't have little ones at home any longer," or family's older now, that, you know, we're, then you fill in any kind of family that you want to talk about. Because if you've got little ones, this is going to be talking about that, the importance of little ones at home, or even any children at home. But we can talk about my bowling friends or my bowling family, or we can talk about golf friends as our golf family, or work friends as our work family. So this will apply, I think, to all. Here's something that I've noticed, all right? As I have, 33 years in youth ministry and now 6 months standing in front of you guys, something that I noticed, Karen and I both noticed, the last years in youth ministry, as things just progressed through time, something that we noticed, kind of like the school system, more and more people, more and more parents, more and more grandparents, more and more of those in charge of kids expect the system to do their job. Okay? I got an amen from Donna, I know, right? And I'm sure Star agrees. You know, it's just that we have become a society that has said, "Hey, there's something for that. There's a program for that. There's a system for that. There's something else to be done when it comes down to things that I need to be doing as a parent, all right? Or even things that I need to do at work, things that I need to do at school, different things that have to be done." Karen and I noticed that as as youth ministry evolved, so to speak, you know, it was our responsibility all of a sudden to teach them about etiquette. It was our responsibility to teach them about dating skills and talk about things that we're like, wow, have y'all not ever talked about that? You know, they're like, well, we've been meaning to, kind of a thing. And so it wasn't the original purpose of youth ministers to be the parents. But very, very, very many, can I say it that way? A lot of parents decided that that was our job, was almost to take over some parenting skills. And it was always Karen and I's thought was we were just simply there to enforce and to add to and strengthen the foundation that had already been built. And so as we talk a little bit about families, I want you to realize that God gave you as a parent or a grandparent, it's your responsibility to get your children on that right path. You know, it's your responsibility to make sure they understand the things that are most important. And don't wait around for a system or a program to make sure your children are going to love God, because that's going to make it really difficult. We talked last week, you have 1,440 minutes in every single day. You know, how you use those minutes is up to you. And if you waste them, you don't get them back. You know, that equates to about 168 hours. I know in a meeting once I was talking with parents, and parents were a little, you know, concerned about things. And one of the things stated was something as silly as, well, my kids don't even know the books of the Bible in order. It's like, I get them for like 2 hours a week. You know, and you want me to teach them the books of the Bible, or you want me to teach them about God in relationship and strengthening that relationship? So, you know, sometimes we have to think about, we have 168 hours. How do we spend that time? We need to use it more wisely. Look with me at Matthew 14, 22. And there's so much in this chapter, but I chose this verse for a reason, and I think it will make sense to you as we move along. Immediately, it says, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. He dismissed what crowd? Matthew 14 is a great chapter. I mean, I could probably preach 10 lessons just from Matthew 14 alone. It's an amazing chapter. It starts out, the first 12 verses talk about Herod and how Herodias dances for him. And he says, hey, I'll give you up to half my kingdom. What do you want? I want John the Baptist's head on a silver platter. And so we hear that story. We read that Jesus is told that his cousin, his friend, his preparer of the path is dead. And so in verse 13, it says he looks for a solitary place. But it's in verse 14 that we find the crowds have found him. All right, they've come all the way around the Sea of Galilee. They found Jesus. They want to hear more from him. They want to know more. They want to see more. They understand what's going on. So in verse 14, it says that he had compassion on them. So he has compassion on them. And so he doesn't go to find a solitary place. He stays and he spends time with them. And 5,000 men are there, not inclusive of the women and the children. This is a great chapter, Matthew 14. And so he spends that time. His disciples come to him and say, hey, it's dinner time. We better get these guys out of here because they need to go find food. And he says, well, what do we have? Oh, we got 5 loaves, 2 fish. You know, Andrew finds the kid with a snack pack, so to speak. And he says, you know what? Good enough. That's good. They have a prayer over it. They pass it out, and the miraculous feeding of the 5,000. And so that's the crowd. When we read the rest of the Gospels, when we read Mark and Luke and John and we put the story together, when I was growing up, we did a system, 14696. That's one of the numbers that I remember as part of this system. And what it was Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, 14, Matthew 14, Mark 6, Luke 9, John 6. That way you knew where the chapters were for this. This is one of the few miracles that's in all four Gospels. So it's in, you know, Mark 6, Luke 9, and John 6, 14696. So, you know, if you want to read about Jesus healing or the nobleman's son in John chapter 2, 0002. So you have to know that, right? So it's a zip code system. And I don't know why. 14696 always stuck with me. You read all four of those and you find out that the crowd's trying to come to make Jesus king. They're like, this is the guy. He's going to lead us. He's going to rule us. He's the man. And Jesus has nothing to do with that. This morning, I want to focus on those four words. he dismissed the crowds. He told them to go home. The Greek word literally means he constrained them, he compelled them, he told them, go home. All right? I have better things to do. And you go, well, wait a minute. This is the same crowd that's followed Jesus. They've heard the disciples teaching. They've heard Jesus' teaching. They've seen the miracles that he's done. They're attracted to him. They're drawn to him. They've just experienced another miracle. They've just been fed. Who does that? I mean, who gets a crowd? I mean, it's exciting to preach in front of people. It's exciting to have lots of people and to tell them about Jesus, or to tell them, in his case, about God, right? And talk about what God has done for them and have this huge crowd and then say, you know what? Go home. Who does that? Jesus. Jesus does that. Jesus sends them home. Why? He dismissed the crowd. Look at verse 23. This just tells you a lot about time. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. And later that night, he was there alone. Remember I said he heard about John the Baptist, looked for a solitary place, couldn't find it. Crowds came. Part of his mission, to seek to save the lost. That's part of his mission. But here's another mission statement. We talked about it last week. Jesus understood his own limits. He knew where his strength was going to come from. You say, well, Mike, wait a minute. You just said you're going to have a lesson on family. I am. Okay? But let me tell you something. You can't be the dad that you want to be. You can't be the mom you want to be. You can't be the parent you want to be. You can't be the friend you want to be. You can't be the grandparent you want to be unless you go to God first. I mean, he dismissed the crowd. He got rid of that which was going to distract him from what was important. He said no to the important in order to say yes to the vital. He said no to a good opportunity in order to say yes to a better opportunity. Jesus said no to a throne in order to say yes to a cross. Okay, it's really about how we spend our time and what's most important to us. It was a deliberate choice on Jesus' part to honor his priorities. It was not a selfish decision. And you can kind of look at it and say, you know, here's all these people that need Jesus. Yes, but you know what? He needs his Father. And he needs the strength that comes from that relationship. And so as we move on and talk about leadership and we talk about first things first and how we spend our time, we need to get our strength in our relationship with God. I can't do what I do without God's help and without God's strength. And all of us need that as well, regardless of what you're trying to accomplish. All right? And secondly, we need to be home. We need to be with our family. We need to spend time with those that we love. I love this saying that I found. It says, to prove his love for her, he swam the deepest river. He crossed the widest desert. He climbed the highest mountain. She divorced him because he was never at home. You know, you think about that. What are the great things that we're doing for each other, right? We're going to do all this in the name of, but really, am I there? Have I done anything? An exhaustive study was conducted and proved no woman has ever shot her husband while he was doing the dishes. All right? We're going to do what we're going to do, correct? Parents rate their inability to spend enough time with their children as the greatest threat to the family. Whew. Always hurts my heart. I think in the latter years, we fixed some of the time that we didn't spend with the kids. Always gets me. Got me last week, will get me this week. You know, in the name of ministry years ago, in the early years, I mean, quick story. I didn't get married until I was 31. Owned my own business. Worked. That was what I did. Busy schedules. Knew what I could do. Knew what I could accomplish. Those things were important to me. Karen and I got married. She became important to me. You know, we were married 6 months, got pregnant. All of a sudden, Hunter shows up. And nothing changed in regards to we still have to accomplish tasks. That was important. You know, we got this beautiful, wonderful ministry. And Karen's a hard worker, and we're going, and there's times when Karen's going, hey, you know, can you come home? Can we do? Why don't you just go with me? So we're doing ministry together, and then Hunter shows up, and you know, I was like, where's the time? I didn't realize it. I didn't realize it early on. Yeah, maybe you've been there and done that. Missed out. Not didn't miss out on a lot. I just remember most cutting, hurting wake-up call statement ever was when a kid was in crisis and we were supposed to have a family night. And Hunter said, was he six? Oh, it's okay, Dad. We know you love them more than us anyway. And I don't think he meant it cutting. It was just reality. And so, tell you, those of you that have younger ones, spend time with them. This is your moment. This is your time. So we've tried to make up for that. And I think they're fine. They're smiling and laughing like, wow, you were there, Dad. You spent a lot of time with us. I know. But those early years were brutal. So those of you that are thinking about having kids and doing all that kind of stuff, pay attention to this survey. This survey was conducted for the Massachusetts Mutual Life Insurance Corporation. Inability to spend enough time with their children is the greatest threat to the family. 35% pointed to time constraints as the most important reason for the decline in family values. All right, 22% said it was lack of discipline. But 35% pointed to time constraints, which was the number one answer. 63% listed family as their greatest source of joy. I want you to pay attention because I'm a big numbers guy. 63% said that their family was their greatest source of joy. You fill that in, husband, wife, friends, whatever. Greatest source of joy. But, and as we say, one T only, big but. There's a big but, right? 63%. But despite their desire for more family time, 68% of those surveyed said they would probably accept a job requiring more time away from home if offered higher income or greater prestige. Thinking that's not priority. So time together is important. So I think we should take a look at the activities we've got planned for the next coming days and weeks and months. And it'll tell us a lot about our priorities. It may be that we need to dismiss the crowds, right? It may be that we need to look at the things that are most important to us. And that includes that time that we spend with God. I love the quote from last week, Martin Luther, I have so much to do today that I think I shall spend the first 3 hours in prayer. I think Martin Luther got it. If we want to accomplish things, if we think about this race that we're running, this life that we're living, where we do life together, where we're encouraging one another and strengthening one another and helping one another to understand what God really wants for us, we've got to pay attention to how we spend our time and the things that are most important with that time. If I asked you to raise your hands this morning, is family important to you? I'm pretty sure you'd raise your hands. How about friends? How about church friends and family? Are they important to you? Then what's keeping us from using those gifts of time that God gives us? And you have to answer that, because when we look at it, it seems like we're busier than we've ever been, and yet we're disconnected more than we've ever been. And I think it comes down to choices, and it comes down to insight. Look at Philippians chapter 1. I think this applies to time just as much as applies to anything else. It's Paul looking at, thank you, Evan, it's Paul looking at the Philippian church and saying, hey, this is my prayer, that your love may abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight, so that you may be able to discern what is best and may be pure and blameless until the day of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God. I want your love to abound in knowledge. And in that knowledge, I want you to discern. I want you to think. I want you to pay attention. I want you to look at how you spend your time, how you spend your energies, and that you have this depth of insight and that you can discern what's best until Christ comes back. And the underlying message is until the day of Christ. his anticipation that Jesus is coming back and focusing on that moment. And he says, I hope you'll be paying attention to how you're spending your time and your energy and your knowledge and your wisdom. Satan is destroying our families. I mean, little by little, he keeps corrupting that fiber. And it's just, it's disheartening to see. And so the question is, you know, are we listening to the world or are we listening to God? Are we in this race and forgetting the things that are most valuable? This guy by the name of Clovis Chappell, he's a minister from about 100 years ago, tells the story of two paddle boats. And they were traveling from Memphis to New Orleans on the Mississippi River. They left about the same time. They're side by side. Testosterone is flowing. You got two guys looking at each other's in their boats, these sailors, and they're like, your boat's so slow. You know, and they start kind of dogging each other, and the challenges are made, and all of a sudden, well, the paddles start going. You know, they start going faster and faster. Oh, we'll beat you to New Orleans. The pace is frantic. They had plenty of coal to get to New Orleans. They didn't have plenty of coal to get to New Orleans in a race. And all of a sudden, one of the boats starts fading back. And the other boats start laughing. Ah, you guys are dumb. You know, and again, you know, we're guys, right? We're sailors. Well, we're not sailors. They're sailors. And they're challenging each other. And so one of the ambitious, competitive sailors looks. There's this huge box of cargo. Picks it up. Throws it into the furnace. Boy, I mean, it burns great, just as good as the coal. So they're like, yeah, throw the cargo in, you know, and the boat goes faster and faster and faster, and they win. But when they get to port, guess what? No cargo. They burned it all up to win the race. And I see that story and I read that story, and the thought is, we've been entrusted children. We've been entrusted family. We've been entrusted to these friendships. And in this frantic race that we call life, are we burning them up just trying to win, to keep up with the Joneses, to do what everybody else is doing so that we meet these expectations, not the Joneses, but, you know, the Joneses, right? Are we trying to just keep up? I mean, is the world dictating what's important to us, or is God dictating what's important to us? I hope in the eternal race to provide for our families, to do what's right, that we'll realize that our time is important. And you've been given a to it this morning. I don't know what happened to my original to it. It drives me crazy this day because Zig Ziglar actually gave it to me personally because I went to a seminar once. And I said, man, I love your idea of a to-it. I'm going to make me one. And he reached in his pocket and he goes, oh, I had some made here. This is not it. I wish it was. It was thicker and, of course it was. It was thicker and nicer and everything was, you know, 25 years ago. But anyway, I would love for you to think about that. We're going to have an invitation song. Craig, hang on for just a second.